Welcome. You're listening to the Internet Advisor Podcast. I'm your host, Foster Brown. Along with my co-host, Gary Baker, and our team of experts, we've been helping people like you since 1998 with your computer problems, introducing you to valuable resources, and promoting tech enterprises throughout Michigan. The Internet Advisor is a two-hour radio program recorded weekly at WJR in Detroit. During the spring and summer of 2015, only the second hour of our show, which features listeners' questions, is heard live each week from 5 to 6 p.m. every Saturday on WJR 760 AM in Detroit. However, both hours of this show are available each week on this podcast and are available to all of our affiliates across the state of Michigan. And now, here are your hosts with this week's Internet Advisor Podcast.
Welcome to the Internet Advisor, your place for answers to your computer questions since 1998, with your co-hosts Gary Baker and Foster Brown and their team of tech experts. The door is always open at InternetAdvisor.net, on Facebook, and through Twitter. But right now it's time to get you in touch with your helpful hosts on this week's edition of Internet Advisor.
Hi there, Foster Brown, the co-host and producer of the Internet Advisor, with a great show this week. Well, it might have been a tearful farewell or a glad they're out of the house again, but a lot of you said goodbye to university students who are heading off to campuses around the state and around the country. And a concern that parents have and that students indeed have is security. But this type of security is internet security. And today we're going to be talking about internet security and the university. Welcome to the Internet Advisor, Foster Brownie, in studio with our usual posse here, Mr. Gary Baker.
Always good to be here.
Glad to have you with us.
Great afternoon here.
Yes, and we have one on the high seas in the second hour of our program.
That's true.
And we'll be telling more about
that. We'll be floating a little bit.
And also it's Mr. Ed Rudell, who has had an exciting week.
I have had an exciting week. It's good to see you, Foster.
Yes, we're going to talk about one aspect of that in particular, and then a man whose life is always a bowl of cherries and lots of excitement, Mr. Cal Carson.
And only because I like you so much, I dye my hair the same color as yours.
There's nothing we can do about it, guys. It doesn't cost a penny to look white.
It is a natural platinum blonde.
Well, Eddie, I teased a little bit about this, but this has been an auspicious week for you. Just kind of quickly, I know somebody you've had on the air with us before with your son Talon and his band, Third Degree Burns, they scored quite a victory out on the west coast of Michigan.
They did. Grand Haven had a Riverwalk type of Battle of the Bands type of thing going on a couple weeks ago. And it was 60 or 80 bands that were performing. And what's neat is social media, actually, they use social media, Twitter, and texting to tally who the winners were.
Oh, that's interesting.
And this was a weekend event. And actually, Third Degree Burns out of Lapeer, Michigan, won first place and the $10,000 grand prize.
Oh, that's wonderful. And we should say, folks, that Third Degree Burns is around Ed Burns, right?
No, it's Gary Burns.
Gary Burns, beg pardon.
Gary Burns started it up with his own children because you know how bands work out.
Right.
You know, so he said, here's the basement, here's the equipment with his own kids. And then after his kids got out of high school and went to college, they weren't doing it. He can't kick out the rest of the kids. And so all these other, you know, so now he's up to 56 kids.
That's
three
wonderful.
Different groups.
These are kids who have come through the band.
Completely free.
Completely trained. And just just hats off to him for what he's done there. And I'm so glad
a lot of
he
volunteers.
Received that recognition. But the story I want you to tell about was your experience with the Chinese Amazon.
Yes, Alibaba.
Not a large Chinese lady. Okay. Yeah. This is Chinese Amazon.
Yep. If many of you have not heard, and I haven't registered yet. I did last week, Alibaba.com, which is this up-and-coming website, very much like Amazon, but it's on the Chinese mainland. And I needed to buy a circuit board for an electronics component. And I am like, I spent almost $200 for this thing, and I have this $15 circuit board that I cannot fix. I am not going to dispose of this rest. So I tracked down a manufacturer using,
In China.
So I opened the unit up and I found the actual manufacturer is Hakusatsu. And they manufacture this for four different other people, including Panasonic, who was the light that I had. And
So the Chinese do work with the Japanese.
I do know, yeah.
So, yeah, apparently.
How did you communicate with them? That's what I want to know.
I wrote an email. They had to contact
Chinese,
us.
They're speaking Chinese. You're speaking English.
I wrote an English letter with a great paragraph description, and I got this, you know, yes, sir, Mr. Or, no, yes, Rudell. How may we help you? And I realized very quickly I'm going to have to translate to native Chinese. Yep. So I used to translate.google.com.
Okay.
And my first couple emails didn't get much better results. I would go type in my paragraph that I wanted into translate.google.com, type in the native Chinese language with the American paragraph below it, and do it again. And they just came back with, you know, I don't, you know, something
so
about sisters.
Were you doing Sichuan instead of Mandarin?
So what I ended up doing.
Oh, that's a good question.
I also tried Korean too. So I pasted several different languages in there. Simplified Chinese, which is Korean, okay. And then Chinese, and then English. So what I ended up doing is I actually pasted into separate translate Google websites. Okay, here's my English paragraph. Or my English sentence. I pasted it. Here's the native Chinese. I opened up another window, pasted the native Chinese, translated back to English, and it was nothing like what I was trying to say. So what I found out is I had to carefully form my English sentence and remove any plurals or ands in the sentence. So I could not say and this. Simple statements, concise. And once I did that, and I was able to translate back and forth between native Chinese and English and back again.
Going back and forth to see what it said.
Google Translate to do this, and it finally...
Finally, when I got a sentence that wasn't talking about a sister, and was actually talking about a circuit board, I knew I was in the home, I was, you know, in the park.
Just for fun, how long did it take you to do that?
It took 6 emails.
Okay.
6 emails.
And did you get what you needed?
I did. So I went there. One of the unique things with Alibaba that I did not realize is although the company was not prepared to have a part number for the individual circuit board, they had a Alibaba store front. So they said, reference the main part, which was $125.
So this is a manufacturer that manufactures tens of thousands of these things.
Yes.
And you were asking for one of them.
One
that
of
was
the
part of the challenge.
And they're not used to dealing with American consumers, U.S.
consumers.
Yeah,
an individual consumer.
They were interested that they sell in bulk to...
Right, you want 10,000, right? Right? No, I don't want 10,000.
But they also have a presence where they'll sell individual items to, you know, consumers. So so through their website, and that's what I kept on asking for, links and part numbers. So what they said was, here's the part number, $125. Go ahead and start the purchasing process. And what I discovered is that before you actually put your credit card number in, it'll actually give you an order number.
Okay.
And the way they described it is, give us the order number, we'll modify your purchase,
your purchase
to reflect
order.
The correct price. So basically, the product is the same, but I'm going to get for $25.
I love it.
They modified the price for me, and they're going to ship me a circuit board. So in 6 to 8 weeks, we'll find out if this was successful.
If the container ship, if one of his relatives arrives, or if you get the part that you want.
That's it. Theheckwithmatch.com. Order a circuit board. You get a sister. Hey, you got the mind matched up. This is awesome.
And this site is larger than Amazon.
It is.
They do more e-commerce than Amazon does.
And you found out something else, too, about this.
But this is the Chinese Amazon.
Amazon here, the price varies from $186 for this part to $125. I went to Alibaba or AliExpress.com, $85.
And you ended up actually getting it for $25.
Well, because they're going to modify the order and give me just the circuit board.
It took you 6 emails.
It just took me 6 emails. And the good news is,
I love it.
I might use this for Christmas. If I start now, in 2 months, by the time Christmas comes around, I could save 50%.
I love that. That container ship could arrive just after Thanksgiving with either all the relatives or the parts.
I did take a precaution, and I did use a prepaid Visa card, though.
All right. We'll be back in just a moment to talk about internet security on university campuses. Well, guys, in the opening to the program, I alluded to the fact that in a lot of households, in my household in particular, just recently, we said goodbye to one of my grandsons who's heading back to Michigan State University for his second year there. And there are other members of the family who will be heading back to various universities and institutions of higher learning to resume their classes and also to resume connecting with one another and with their families and friends on the internet. And a considerable concern is that when these young people go back to the university settings or college settings, that they're setting back in a place where they could be, if they're not very careful, vulnerable to being hacked and having important information taken from them. So how do they keep themselves safe there? Well, first of all, we have to say that for the universities and colleges they're going to, that's a big concern. And somebody who represents that concern at the University of Michigan and who has been our guest before is Don Welch, who's with us right now. He is the University of Michigan's Chief Information Security Officer. Don, thank you very much for being with us here on the Internet Advisor.
Oh, my pleasure to be back again.
Yes, it is. It's a return visit. And Gary was reminding me that we've had you on before, that you've been very busy in the state of Michigan, involved in computers here for a long time. As a matter of fact, you were the CEO at Merit Network back in 2006. Maybe it was the last time we talked with him.
Well, just a few years ago. Hey, Don.
Yeah. Hi, Gary. How are you?
Good. Don ran Merit, and if you'll recall, Don, why don't you tell us a little bit of the history of Merit before we get into the other stuff?
Sure. Well, Merit was formed back in 1966 to try and get the mainframe computers from Wayne State, Michigan State, and the University of Michigan to talk together. So essentially, networking was created here in Michigan, and Merit Network, along with IBM and MCI, won the NSF contract to try and figure out how to make a network of networks, or get all these networks to talk to each other, or to perform internetworking, which, of course, became the Internet. Then it was turned over to the commercial companies, and we've got spam and Justin Bieber videos, and Merit apologizes.
When I first got involved, it was NSFNet, and Merit managed that, and it gave way to the commercial internet and the web as we know it today.
So we can both blame and thank Merit for inventing the internet. The people who invented the internet. Well, you've had a lot of experience in terms of technology and IT services for a long time. Matter of fact, I understood that you were involved in teaching at West Point for a long time and had a long military career there as well.
Yes. Yeah, some friends and I decided that the big threat that would be facing the nation coming in the 21st century would be computer security. And so we took the initiative to start the program at West Point, much as West Point engineers created the railroad system for the country. West Point helped them, and we thought it'd be very important for West Point to create cybersecurity professionals that could defend both the armed forces in the country, and then also just throughout the civilian network.
Don, what year was that you were doing this?
That was back in 98 and 99.
Wow. And then Merit, and now you're protecting the students at the University of Michigan, or at least trying to, sometimes from themselves, right?
That's probably a really good way to put it.
So I've gone to safecomputing.umich.edu, and there's a lot of information there. Do the kids read that?
Some do. We actually send out a quiz in October to all the students and have some prizes if they'll complete it and get their score up to 100%. And we get about 15% that comply, which is actually pretty high for those kind of optional things. And but one of the ways we try and educate the students in everything, not just in the classroom.
Don, I'm curious, I would imagine in some ways, I'm thinking of Ed's son, Talon, and I know, Cal, your daughter was not that long ago was involved in universities, and I've got grandchildren, excuse me, who were involved in university right now. They come in, I would imagine, feeling pretty much like they know all that there is to know about this. And that must, in some ways, make it kind of hard to keep them safe.
Yeah, and they they're of the age in which their judgment's not fully developed.
Yeah.
And they tend to be have more risky behavior in all different ways, but that includes the way they use the internet. And we see a lot of young people then kind of going back and maybe regretting what they had posted on Facebook and so forth.
Right.
But also, those that can have their accounts hacked. You know, my own son had his bank account cleaned out when his debit card was stolen. And so those kinds of things certainly can happen, and they're quite common.
Yeah. You know, when you think about the university setting, it's a time for exploration. It's a time for open collaboration. And you know, certainly U of M, you know, is fully engaged in that type of activity. And then they want to do it online, but sometimes that conflicts, right, with safe computing practices.
Yeah, it does. The so, you know, for the University of Michigan to excel the way that it does, you know, faculty, researchers, students, clinicians need to be able to explore and make quick changes and so forth and adapt to new technologies and the changing environment, which, of course, is the opposite of the things security professionals want. You want everything to stay the same and, you know, no uncertainty. So so a lot of what we do is education. I think students on the Internet tend to think they're in a place that is trusting and safe, when really they should think about the Internet as walking through the diciest neighborhood at night, which you can do safely if you take certain precautions.
Right.
And but you know, when you're sitting in your room or you know, at the Dude or someplace comfortable, you tend to not think that you're actually a little bit in danger.
Don Welch, by the way, Dr. Don Welch is our guest here. He's the University of Michigan's Chief Information Security Officer. His task, and it is a formidable one, is to make the Internet safe at the University of Michigan. And did you have something you want to chime in? Because I know you've got a student going back to campus now at Grand Valley.
Yeah, well, one of the things that they do is this, they do a lot of gaming, and a lot of PCs have the ability to do, you know, gaming online, and but they also have to do their homework, and they get their assignments, and sometimes they have to post their homework at night with their computers, and if they become infected or their computer's down, you know, they're missing assignments, and a lot of times, like you said, they just make poor choices. It can be difficult.
Don, if there was one thing that you wanted to impress on a student going into the university and onto their, maybe their parents or guardians who are listening right now, what would that one thing be, the really key thing, if you had one shot at it?
So if any of your accounts, you have the opportunity for two-factor authentication, and a lot of people will be familiar from this from their bank accounts, but it's more than just a password. So you know, a cell phone number or something like that, that tends to make it a lot harder for remote individuals to steal an account. Secondary to that is don't use the password for your email as the password for other accounts that have money behind them. There's, you know, a retail account where you've saved a credit card, or obviously bank accounts and so forth, because most, you know, a lot of these sites use your email address as your identifier, logon, and then they'll an attacker, if they steal the password to your email, then they can go and try it at Target and try it at all these different banks.
Right.
They don't have to know where you shop, but if they hit the jackpot, then you lose.
Yeah, exactly. And as they say, if you hit the jackpot, you lose in this particular instance. Don, hang on a second. We're going to come back, and Cal had a question for you here at Cal Carson in studio. We're talking with Don Welch, who is the University of Michigan's Chief Information Security Officer. He's in charge of cybersecurity at the University of Michigan. We're talking about keeping our students safe online this year. By the way, before we go a little any further, I want to thank Mike Sent, who is the person behind the glass today, helping us to produce this first part of our program. Thank you very much, Mike, for all your hard work there. We're talking about, in some ways, you know, keeping our most precious commodity, and I just say that kind of tongue-in-cheek, our children safe while they're on university and college campuses around the country and around our fair state. And we're talking right now with Dr. Donald Welsh, who is the University of Michigan's Chief Information Security Officer, and he's tasked with keeping all online security at the University of Michigan safe and secure, which is a mighty tall effort. Cal, you had a question before we went to the break that you wanted to ask.
Doctor. I wanted to know whether or not it's a good idea for kids to use something like maybe 1Password or some type of encrypting software to help them get through that thing if they don't have two-factor
authentication. Like a password vault of some kind. LastPass, RoboForm.
Those are good solutions, and they help a lot. I think the most important thing, though, is your sensitive accounts, the ones that you could lose money through, you really should have a different password, and those products generally help you manage that.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. They help you to generate some pretty secure kind of passwords.
Yeah.
Right.
You know,
keep them straight, yep.
I see on the site there's a place to report an IT security incident. Do you get many of those? Do students report incidents? Do they even understand them?
Yeah, we get, you know, I would say probably 10 to 20 per day during the summer. We'll get more when the students come back. So people are always having their passwords compromised. That's probably the most common one. Mm-hmm. And so we as you see on the site, we've got advice of what to do if your password gets compromised. But a lot of times those passwords are used in spear phishing attacks, those accounts are used in spear phishing attacks, which can be very damaging to the institution.
Can you talk about, just explain that for our listeners, what a spear phishing attack is?
Sure. So if we think of a phishing attack, and it is where you send out an email that tries to entice or catch somebody into giving away their information.
Right.
And a spear phishing attack, the attacker does some research and creates an email message that is custom designed for a small group of people or maybe even an individual. And they're very hard to determine whether they're legitimate or not, because they might look like it comes from someone who you know, or it might look like this person knows you, and it's fairly easy to fall for.
Yeah, as a matter of fact, I got one this week that purported to be from Apple. It was interesting. Exactly at the time that we were talking about this, or that I was researching the background for the show, boom, I get this thing that purports to be from Apple, and it just wants me to update my contact information, et cetera, for Apple, and I thought, fat chance.
Yeah.
But that would be one that would be kind of like that spear phishing type of attack.
Sure.
Matter of fact, though, I understand, that I saw in the Detroit Free Press, I believe this last week, that in particular there was a phishing attack that was leveled against the University of Michigan, and it was through Facebook.
Yes. So one of our administrators suffered a spear phishing attack where he gave up his credentials for his private Facebook account.
Ouch.
Facebook only allows you to have one account, so that was the account that was an administrator on three of our athletics pages. And as you could guess, University of Michigan has some of the most followers of any institution in the nation.
Yeah.
So spammers were able to put content on our site, and for a few hours until we got it taken care of, a lot of people viewed that content, and I'm sure it was worth their while, and they got paid for the clicks that came through that.
And certainly people, when that happens, it goes around on Twitter, so that encourages more people to go to the site.
Yeah.
So that happens an awful lot. You know, as a matter of full disclosure, you and I serve on the governor's cyber advisory council, and I'm organizing the Michigan Financial Industry Cyber Security Council, and we were just up at the Michigan State Police's Michigan Cyber Command Center, and they are getting better and better and better at connecting all the dots. And I'm thinking the university's doing the same thing.
Our capability is really quite good. Of course, we cooperate very closely with law enforcement, both at the state level and the federal level. when we have intrusions. We're cooperating more amongst Big Ten universities and within the state. So it's a big problem, but we're working together, and we're getting better at using tools and training people. And you know, hopefully we will win the fight, but it's much like my time in the Army. You know, you never come away cleanly. Sometimes the bad guys will win, and sometimes we win.
Yeah, yeah. Don, the University of Michigan, obviously, is one of the premier universities in the United States for research, et cetera. I'm curious, are you folks also on kind of the cutting edge of cybersecurity as well, looking for new ways of keeping us? Because, for instance, I've heard that passwords really are going to have to go. They are so vulnerable to being broken. Are you folks involved in looking for some other ways of protecting us?
Yeah, we. So obviously, we've got some of the best researchers in our faculty, and in fact, we just agreed to provide some seed money for someone in the School of Information to do some research that will benefit us in the short term, but also then lead to some breakthroughs that can be used more widely. And in passwords themselves, as I said, they're insufficient, but right. The idea of two-factor authentication is a very important topic now, and I think you will see it being used more broadly in almost every kind of a logon, because the password alone is just not sufficient.
You know, I've seen a lot of different types of two-factor authentication. We should explain that.
Yes, thank you.
For the audience, it's kind of what you know, maybe your password, and also maybe what you have, right?
Yes.
So what are some of the options there?
Well, so probably the simplest option, which is is typified by a local Michigan company, Duo Technology, where when you go to log in, you get a little message on an app on your smartphone, and you confirm it. So the holder of that smartphone is not sufficient to log in. You also have to know the password, and if you know the password, you have to hold the smartphone.
Mm.
Other things are biometrics. A lot of computers now come with finger scanners.
Right.
Some of the most promising ones use the camera on the computer to do facial recognition.
Ah.
Some of the older technology are tokens. Some of you may have that count the minutes accurately, and they know which token you have, and so you've got to be able to enter the right number in.
Within a certain amount of time, you have to write that.
Right.
Put that. I know, for instance, with Hotmail, I use two-factor authentication,
right.
So I'll put my password in, and then it will send a number, like a 7 or 8-digit number, to my text message, and then I have to take that number and enter it as well.
Yep, yeah, and you're very smart to use that on your Hotmail account.
Yeah, and anything, especially bank accounts and anything like that. Don, I don't know if you saw this, but I saw research this past week where they were doing facial recognition on dogs with a 98% accuracy.
Wow.
I said, sometimes I can't tell the dogs apart, but obviously some software can.
I hadn't seen that, but that's amazing.
Yeah, so I can imagine that's going to be an option for us soon.
I'm wondering, Don, if our kids are going to be coming back from school, maybe with a whole different attitude and set of skills and tools for keeping themselves secure that we haven't learned. And they may have to teach us some things that they're learning at the university level.
Yeah, well, I certainly hope so, although being the father of four children, it is amazing. They're really smart, but they do make some mistakes.
You're right.
Yeah, we've talked many times about the common sense filter.
Oh.
And sometimes that doesn't work as well when you're young.
What's ironic, too, Don, and not to dig at this too much, but the recent problem with Facebook that you folks had was because somebody who should have known better got caught with a phishing exploit.
Yep, and you know, we certainly want people to be smarter, But we also do understand that even the best people sometimes get caught.
Yep.
And so we want to have other protections in place.
Yep.
So that we don't end up losing too much.
Knowing the biblical admonition that pride goes before a fall, be careful if you think that you're safe, because if you're on the internet, there's always a chance for slipping up. Don Welch, thank you again so much for being with us and for working so hard to keep the folks at the University of Michigan safe online. Been good talking with you again.
Yes, well, thank you very much. You guys are great to talk to because you're always very well prepared.
Thank you so much. That's Don Welch from the University of Michigan, back in just a moment. Guys, I wanted to do something just as a practical benefit for our listeners that we finally are getting a chance to do. Ed Riddell is going to help us with this. But guys, you know, I look around the studio here and all of us are on different devices. Gary on his Surface Pro and Cal's got a big old Mac over there. And Ed's got a Dell and I've got a Mac here and we got cell phones. All of them depend on one thing. Their electrical power source, which in most of our cases, I think most of us are running on batteries right now.
Well, and it's interesting because my son Justin is here in the studio with us because we're going to go down to the Tiger game after the show. And he just asked me for my charger so he could charge his cell phone, right? So,
well, Justin,
you're right.
this input then is going to be important because we're going to talk about some of the important things to know. And there are some myths that have been involved in terms of how to take a good care of particularly your lithium-ion batteries. And because they are often the batteries that are charging most of our phones and computers and the many, many different devices we have. So, Ed, I thought we'd take some time. There was an article that appeared just recently online, and maybe just share some of the highlights from that are very important.
Well, first, you know, I did not realize this, but charging up your cell phone all the way every day isn't healthy for your lithium ion batteries. The article actually recommends charging it maybe once a week to get to 100%. Now, a lot of cell phones have the ability to automatically shut off when they reach 100%, so they're not constantly charged up or topped up, if you will. Some of that anxiety about charging is taking away from us, and we don't have to worry about it.
Because it's built into the phones.
It's built into the phones, right. Okay. They're starting to get, the manufacturers are getting smart about that. But the other thing that, it just makes common sense is, well, heat kills, of course.
Right.
It will kill a battery. So they were basically saying that if your lithium ion battery was at 32 degrees, over the course of the year, it would only lose maybe 8% or 7% of its charge life, basically.
Okay.
But if you're at a constant 78 degrees, you're going to be losing approximately 18%. If you're at 112 degrees or 122 degrees at your battery over the same year, you've lost 60% of your battery life.
Wow.
So heat and having your battery hot, charged in a hot place.
So guys, I'm thinking, for instance, a laptop that's kept in a bag. You know, it's carried around where maybe it's turned on, Cal, and
yeah, but you
it's
put that
warm.
In sleep mode, and so it's definitely not using the type of power it would normally use when it's running full time.
I don't always intentionally do that, though. I kind of close it up and pop it in the bag.
Well, when you close
it,
it puts it to sleep.
It puts it to sleep.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, but keeping it in your trunk, you know, isn't probably a good thing. Now, remember a few years ago, there was the laptop battery explosion because of the dangers, because they overheat, because lithium ion can be explosive if it doesn't charge properly. So the manufacturers of the batteries have to be very careful. They become very good at the manufacturing process of these, so little microscopic short circuits don't take place in the lithium ion, causing it to get overheated and explode.
Go ahead, Kenny.
A lot of times... people are saying, don't let it run completely to zero.
Yes.
Is that still a problem with lithium ions and new ones?
Yes. Okay. Do not let them run completely to zero.
So you want to be able to shut them off before then.
And a lot of them do
get them on the charger.
Smart devices will shut down. I mean, Windows will shut down at 7% by default. Smartphones do about the same thing at around, I get really nasty warnings at about, 4%.
Yeah, right. I tell you, I'm going to do something nasty to you. You don't stop this.
Yeah. Exactly.
Now, with the old nickel cadmiums and those sort of things, it was always good to exercise those batteries by running them down to darn near as low as you possibly can. you get and then bringing them back up once in a while. Is that the same with lithium?
No, absolutely not. Okay. It's actually, it'll actually shorten the life.
Okay.
To exercise it that much. From going to empty to full every couple days, it'll actually reduce the life of your battery. The good thing to do, what they're saying is between 20 and 80%. That's a good sweet spot.
If you bounce between there, okay.
So now a lot of people are going to wireless charging. That's not always good, is it?
Apparently not. It induces a little bit more heat to the batteries.
Yeah, I didn't realize that.
Yeah, because of the RF and stuff
not
like that.
Not yet, anyway.
Not
They'll
yet.
They'll probably figure
it
out.
It is cool as hell to be able to throw my phone up on the dash.
You're not supposed to say that on radio.
Oh, well. It is cool.
Very cool.
To be able to do that.
Proximity charging. Whether hell really was cool.
Right, that's...
Yeah, good point there.
But that's another story entirely. And we're
that's
not
a different show.
That
that's not our show.
But those pads, now, was the keypad or QI... was one of those pads, right? And there are some phones that do that kind of thing. And as you say, it really is neat to be able to just kind of flip your phone on top of that. But it sounds like there's a certain price to doing that.
There's a price in weight on the device and also in the heat that it takes.
What about fast charging? Because a lot of people are going to, I can do this a quick charge or I can do this trickle charge. Why would you ever do trickle if you could do fast?
Yeah, and again, doing a fast charge induces more heat. So it's a great idea.
Okay.
And my Samsung phone has fast charge and I used it all the time. And then I'm reading this article and it's apparently it's not such a good thing to do.
You know, it's really weird because every day when I go home, at the end of the day, I plug my phone in and let it charge all night.
I do too. It sits by my bed, just in case I get a call.
And if my battery is going to last a lot longer, well, you know something? I don't think I'm going to keep that phone that long because all the phones I've ever had, I've never had a battery failure, ever.
Mm.
Well, that's good. Well, you know,
it's a gravity failure sometimes.
No, that's not a gravity failure. That's called a gravity upgrade.
That's a good point.
So what we're going to have to rely on is the manufacturers of these smart devices that we have are going to have to. I mean, I can hardly get through a day without going through my entire battery's sources. So I do leave it plugged in all night. So we're going to have to rely on the firmware or the software on our smartphones and our tablets and everything to be able to charge overnight and then, you know, and prevent that overheating and reduction of life.
We've hit at some myths, though, that I think they're important to keep, like the business of letting them go all the way to zero and then charging them back.
And don't stick them in the freezer anymore. That's not a good thing.
Yeah, you know? Not unless you have to dry them out after you dropped them in the toilet or something. So,
I'm not eating ice cream at your house ever.
So a lot of times these battery packs, right? Your phone's going low. I've given each of my kids one just in case so they can carry it out. And then you can plug it in using USB, and that charges them. How's that? Does that work okay?
It should, right? I would think it would. Okay. I mean, I didn't find anything in the article. Do you remember reading anything in the article about that?
I haven't seen anything.
I can only traditionally find...
Yeah. Cal's holding it up. Can everybody see that on the air? Okay, good. He's holding up right up to the mic. Good job.
And we were given some by our own geek, Rick Broida, brought in a few of those.
That's right.
And I made sure my daughter had one of those when she went to school.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm thinking that those are battery assist packs and do charging. They do not do fast charging.
Yeah.
You know?
Speaking of fast charging, I got to let you guys know this. For the future, a team of researchers, this is an article that was on the online recently, a team of researchers in Singapore have developed a next-generation lithium-ion battery that can recharge a battery to 70% in just 2 minutes.
Yes.
That means that it would be able to charge an entire electric car in just 15 minutes. And here's the kicker. It lasts for over 20 years.
The charge?
The battery, apparently.
No.
I
can understand
but
that.
What is the price of that monster?
Right now, obviously obscenely expensive because of research and development. It says, normally it's safe to be skeptical about new battery technology, but there's something rather hopeful about this breakthrough. The new battery isn't altogether new. It's actually just an improvement upon existing lithium-ion technology.
Right, because the big thing with lithium-ion is the surface area. When you charge a lithium-ion battery, all the electrons travel over the surface. So if you can induce microscopic dimples and valleys and increase the surface area, that's where you get the performance.
Well, it says the key comes in the form of nanostructures instead of the traditional graphite used to create the lithium-ion batteries.
Isn't that what I just said?
That's exactly it. The new technology uses a cheap titanium dioxide gel. Anyway... Hope is on the horizon, and Ed has got his finger on the pulse. Folks, thank you so much for being with us in this first hour of the Internet Advisor, but there's more to come, and we're going to be on the high seas in the next one. We'll be talking about Navy Week here in Detroit, and the thunder on the river, and some good stuff, as well as answering our listeners' questions. All that's coming up in the second hour of the Internet Advisor. Please stay tuned for that as well. You're listening to a podcast of the Internet Advisor Show. To see the show notes for this program, visit our homepage, internetadvisor.net. That's where you'll find past podcasts, our toolkit of free software to clean up your computer and keep it running strong, plus other resources. If you have a question for our hosts, just click the contact form on the homepage and send us an email with the details. And don't forget, look for us on Facebook. Now let's get back to the second hour of the Internet Advisor. Welcome aboard the Internet Advisor. And I say that welcome aboard because there's a lot going on this week on the bounding Maine. Hi, I'm Foster Brown, the co-host and producer of the Internet Advisor, along with Gary Baker, Ed Riddell, and Cal Carson. We're here to answer your questions about your computer problems at 800-859-0957, and you can line up for that. We'll also be talking about a very special Detroit Navy Week that's going on, along with the Thunder on the River that's taking place as well. Thank you for tuning in here to the great voice of the Great Lakes, that's WJR, for continuing expert advice. And this time it's expert advice on computers. Gary Baker, Ed Riddell, and Cal Carson in studio here with me, and we have another guest as well. We'll talk about that in just a minute. Our phone number, 800-859-0957, and if you give us a call with your question, we'll put you in line and we'll get you there shortly. What I want to do, however, Gary Baker, is introduce, and maybe you can help me do that, your son, Justin, who is in studio with us and has a very special link to Detroit's Navy Week that's going on right now.
That's right. Justin came down with me to do the show. We're actually going to the Detroit Tiger baseball game afterwards.
Oh, that was the ulterior motive, huh?
But Justin's been interested in the Navy for quite some time. Justin, welcome to the Internet Advisor.
Thanks for having me.
And, another Baker on the air with us.
And you've actually got interested when the Navy lacrosse coach invited you to the prospect camp. So we went out to Annapolis and a couple different times to play. I went to watch you play some lacrosse with their prospect camp.
Yep, I went to a tournament first, and I remember we visited the Naval Academy. We walked around the yard. And then after that, I contacted the coaches, and they invited me to the prospect camp. That's so I played cool. there the next time. That was a lot of fun.
That was a lot of fun, and you did real well, but you've decided that maybe ROTC, maybe?
Yep. I really wanted to go to Michigan, so I thought I could maybe
Good
combine
boy.
The best
okay.
of both worlds.
All right. Enough of the Wolverine stuff. Teasing about that. Have you had a chance to hook up with any of the people from the Navy here this week?
Yeah, not this week, but I went over and I met with one of the recruiters.
Mm, okay.
So I'm starting my application still.
Big week, a lot's going on. And as a matter of fact, we hope to talk with some folks about what's going on during the Navy Week here. Not a big week as well because of Thunderfest that's going on. What I want to do quickly, however, is to check in with Mike Brennan, who is here with us right now. Mike is the editor of MI Tech News, and you got some headlines we're going to talk about here. Mike, welcome to the show.
And Jason, go blue.
Absolutely. Thanks, MI Tech News, by the way, is a great way of keeping up with all the technology and entrepreneur news that's going on around our state. And it keeps expanding. It's co-sponsored by ourselves and Mike Brennan. And as I say, it keeps on expanding. Mike, let's talk about some of the headlines that are in it that you have featured this week. A real good piece of news is Michigan's unemployment rate is dropping.
Yep, first it's the lowest level in 14 years. Little drum roll there, please.
Oh, wow! Yeah,
down to 5.3%. Now, it's questionable whether there's some folks that have dropped out of the labor market mm-hmm. and not looking anymore, and whether they show up in these figures. But we certainly know there's a whole lot of jobs available in technology all over the state.
Yep, and that is very, very good news. Technology in particular being the cutting edge of that, why it's so important to keep in touch with that through MI Tech News. Another thing, now this made me mad, as a matter of fact, when I saw this headline. The budget shortfall could force the MEDC to slash staff by up to 30%. That's the Michigan Economic Development Corporation.
Yeah, it's
corporation.
It's a combination of things, two actually. There's steep reductions from the legislature, but even more so, there's an issue with the Gun Lake Casino. They haven't been paying what they're supposed to pay to the MEDC, and there's a dispute over the terms of the contract.
Oh, dear.
So far, they've withheld about $7 million.
And MEDC is being held hostage to that. And they've been so valuable in developing new business for the state of Michigan. One final thing, it's a good piece of news, especially kind of a little bit of a chest puffing on the west side of the state. The new high-lumen LED bulbs from Muskegon are coming out from Earthtronics, a company out there.
Yeah, absolutely. They're much higher capability. They use a lot less energy. 25,000-hour rated lifetime 10-year warranty. Made in Muskegon.
I love it. Made in Michigan, made in Muskegon. Things to be proud of. Well, those are the kind of things that you'll find out about with MI Tech News. And Mike, every week, brings you headlines from around the state and around the nation. And a very simple way of getting hold of this, folks, how much does it cost you? Absolutely nothing. Simply go to internetadvisor.net and look for the subscribe now button that we have on the site with the with Mike's smiling face there as well, or go to mitechnews.com, put in your email address, and every Friday you will get a load of not just these great headlines about what's going on in technology and entrepreneurship throughout the state of Michigan, but you will also get other resources, like you'll be able to get a copy of our program, you'll be able to get a copy of IT and the D, and many other resources that are out there, and pretty soon some new resources from you, Mike. I understand there's a new talk show on the line.
Yeah, we're going to debut that on September 14th.
That's excellent. So all sorts of great resources. And folks, the best news about all of this is it will cost you absolutely nothing to get. Again, go to mitechnews.com and simply put in your email address, and it'll be on its way. Every Friday, you'll be getting all these resources and headlines. Or go to internetadvisor.net and look for the subscribe now button there. Mike, thank you very much. We're going to be checking in with some folks about some of the exciting things going on during Detroit's Navy Week, and keeping up with that event that's coming here to our fair city and fair state as well. Mike, thanks so much for being with us.
Always my pleasure, Foster.
All right, that's Mr. Mike Brennan, the editor of MI Tech News. We'll be back in just a moment to catch up with some of the exciting things that are going on in Detroit right now during Navy Week, but we'll also be catching up with you and Pam out in Portland. We will be getting to your question very soon at 800-859-0957. And the rest of you who have questions about your computers or getting on the internet or getting around it or getting over the problems you face there, we'll talk with you. We have a very special opportunity this week because it is a very special week in Detroit. Not only is there thunder on the Detroit River, but there's a whole week of honoring the Navy that is going on in our city of Detroit. This is Detroit Navy Week, and with us to talk about that just quickly right now on the Internet Advisor is Lieutenant J.G. James Adams, who's in studio with us. He's a lead planner for Detroit Navy Week, and thanks very much for being with us.
Thanks for having us.
What is Detroit Navy Week? What's going on?
Well, for the entire next week, starting Monday, the Navy is going to have a whole group of representatives descending on Detroit for the week. And our mission is to interact with as many people as possible and kind of educate and inform on what the Navy does for the American public.
Now, this is special for Detroit, but you do this around the country in other cities as well.
Correct. We have 12 this year. We look at kind of areas of the country that don't have a normal day-to-day presence, naval presence, and we try to kind of incorporate other events to kind of plan our Navy Weeks, in this case being Thunder River Michigan Air Show.
So it had nothing to do with one of the most important parts of history in the U.S. Navy being a battle on Lake Erie or anything like that. This is
Well, the decisions were made a lot above me, but I'm sure that came into play.
I must have, I'm sure.
This is, a matter of fact, it's kind of interesting right now. This is the 99th Thunderfest on the Detroit River that's going on right now, which is not part of Navy Week. But, I mean, this is kind of interesting. The timing of this is really kind of cool, because now near Belle Isle, it's historic in a sense of almost 100 years of this kind of competition with these hydroplanes that are going on. But your events will begin with this coming week in Navy presence in Detroit, and it'll be capped off by a very special air show.
Correct. The Blue Angels are going to be performing at Thunder River, Michigan. So that's always real exciting to watch them perform.
Wow.
Now, so, and they do that right over the river?
I think they're doing it at Willow Run Airport.
Okay.
Yeah, that makes more sense. Okay.
Okay. Good. Willow Run Airport will be the base for that one, and that's the Blue Angels, the incredible flight team that will be there. Are there going to be any special vessels visiting Detroit? I was curious.
No, not for this type. Not for this visit. Instead, we have all sorts of different units, including a Navy band out of the Chicago area, Navy band Great Lakes, as well as a whole bunch of other diverse assets coming to
town.
Where
will they be performing, by the way, Jim?
All over the place. To find out where exactly they're going to be performing, I would encourage people to go to navyoutreach.org.
Okay.
And then under the Navy Weeks tab, there's Detroit, and it has all our kind of public events that everybody is welcome to attend.
Excellent. So that's navyoutreach.org, and we'll put that on our homepage, internetadvisor.net, so you folks can link to that as well there. So we got the Navy band coming in. Any other kind of highlights for this coming week?
Yes. We have representatives from EOD Group 3. EOD is Explosive Ordnance Disposal, so it's the Navy's bomb squad. There's two facets to that. There's the EOD techs, the bomb squad, as well as Navy divers, and both of them have really cool jobs, and they're bringing a whole bunch of their gear to show off and tell the public exactly what they do. And
so now if people are interested in the Navy, they can attend most of these events. What if people are interested in maybe joining the Navy, is this a good place for them to come and start to see what the Navy's all about?
Yes, definitely. The local Navy recruiting district has been heavily involved in planning for the Navy Week, so there will be lots of Navy personnel and Navy recruiters there available for people that are interested.
Now, when you say there, that all over the city again?
Yes. We're going to be everywhere from the Detroit Zoo to local YMCAs, Boys and Girls Clubs, Campus Martius Park, Grand Circus Park. We're going to be as many places as possible.
That's really neat. By the way, again, folks, if you go to navyoutreach.org, along the top you'll see Navy Weeks, and then if you click on that, under that is Detroit. And when you click on that, you'll find out more information about what's going to be going on between August 24th and August 30th.
So normally we wouldn't give out an email address of some of our guests, but your email address is right on the site. Are you getting flooded with email asking questions about Navy Week? I guess that's your job, right?
Yeah, I do get some people calling about more information or asking for more information, and it is part of our job to get the word out and educate about what the Navy does. So I welcome those.
Gary, I want to introduce somebody else who's with us on the line right now, somebody that I recall working with many years ago, and that's Janina Jacobs, who's with us. Hi, Janina. How are you doing?
I'm doing just fine, Foster. I remember our work together soundly in the golf arena.
That's exactly it, on the weekends when I was doing the Great Weekend program.
Yeah, so early in the morning.
My goodness, yes. Four?
four, exactly.
Well, you're here to represent something different. You're here to represent the Navy League and the christening of a very special vessel.
That's correct, Foster and Gary. Hello, Gary. The Navy League is basically an organization that anyone can join, and it supports all the sea services. And so we're like a local presence here. We have a council here in Metro Detroit. I'm the vice president of membership of it, and I, you know, would be happy to talk to anybody about that. But we are sort of a local presence for the helping the activities that will go on for the USS Detroit, which is a ship that's it's being built right now, and it will be commissioned here on the Detroit River sometime in 2016. We're hoping for summer, maybe the fall. We're not really sure yet. They don't tell us that until we're about 90 days out. But we're gearing up for that, and actually we've been working with Lieutenant Adams to make this Navy Week very, very special. Of course, they're all special.
Yep.
But we're sort of using this Navy Week and all these activities to bring even more attention to what's going to go on in the next month leading up to the commissioning. So
now,
it's a very, very important thing.
What kind of a vessel is the USS Detroit?
It's a littoral combat ship, and it comes in close to shore. It's fast. Its motto is Swift Vigilance, and that's exactly what it does. It's a very, very fast ship. It can get places very, very quickly, and there you can actually see all that information. We have a website, which is USS Detroit LCS LCS7.com. USS Detroit LCS7.com.
Okay.
And everything you want to know about the USS Detroit is on there.
All right.
We've also got a couple of special events that we scheduled specifically for Navy Week to not only bring attention to Navy and what our wonderful mm-hmm. fighting men and women do, but also to bring attention to the ship. And both of those are on Saturday, August 29th.
Okay.
We're having a motorcycle run, a Taking It to the Limits, leaving Vietnam Veterans Chapter 9 in Detroit and going out to Marine City. It's the USS Detroit Taking It to the Limits mm-hmm. bike cruise. Mm-hmm. There's information about that. And then also another really important event the same day, and it's an all-day affair at the River Raisin National Battlefield Park. And that's in celebration of not only Navy Week, but also National Park Week. It's all day. It's family friendly. They're going to be showing Native American skills. They're going to be showing naval skills. We're going to have a special celebration that evening. The Navy Band will perform.
Oh, excellent.
Yes, we're going to have a program. The crew of the USS Detroit will be there. Thank you, Lieutenant Adams, for scheduling that. So they will be there. And we are also going to have something else that's very important, and that's the premiere of the film, the USS Detroit, The Birth of a Ship and a City Reborn. It's a film about the building of the USS Detroit, but it also talks about the wonderful things that are happening in our own city.
Janine,
and
that sounds wonderful.
Our spokesperson is none other than Tiger legend Willie Horton.
Oh, my. This is really going to be something wonderful. Janine Jacobs is our guest here. She represents the Navy League, excuse me, and we're looking forward to the commissioning of the USS Detroit. Sounds like a fascinating vessel and lots of things going on across this week. Janina, thank you so much for being with us and for letting us know about all these details as well, very important ones as we head towards the end of Navy Week in this coming week.
You're very welcome, and I hope we'll see everybody out there.
All right, thank you. And, Lieutenant, thank you so much for being with us, and we look forward to a great week here in Detroit with Navy Week.
Thank you.
All right, folks, it's time now to get to answering your questions. And, Pam, we will be with you in just a moment. For the rest of you, the number is 800-859-0957. We took that pause to talk about Navy Week here in Detroit. And now it's time to answer your questions at 800-859-0957. Thank you so much for your patience. We wanted to take some time to talk about this big week coming up, Detroit Navy Week, but now it's time to get back to you and your questions. And let's start off, by the way, the phone number is 800-859-0957. And Pam in Lakeport, welcome to the Internet Advisor. How can we help you?
I started out with a problem which has kind of evolved into a catastrophe.
Oh, dear.
My HP Pavilion G6. When I was in Google Chrome mm-hmm. in my Outlook mail, I started getting this yellow bar that would pop up that said Shockwave was not loaded correctly.
Okay.
And then just working in an Excel database where I typed addresses, phone numbers, mm-hmm. and email addresses, whenever I would touch the email address, the PC would lock up.
Wow.
And it would shut down.
Sounds like gremlins. I'm sorry.
Yeah.
That's not an official answer,
then,
but wow.
I got an error message that the default mail client is not properly installed.
Okay. Hang on a second, because we got a couple of things here. Let's see if we can sort some of these things out for you. We have a problem with a browser.
Well, first, what is their primary email address? I mean, what do you use to access email? Do you use
I use Outlook.
Okay, so Outlook.com or Microsoft's web-based email?
No, it's Hotmail.com.
Yeah, so Hotmail. Okay.
Hotmail is the website. Okay.
And you use your Outlook mail client to access? Use the I guess my question is, Microsoft has a software mail client called Outlook. Are you using that to access your email?
Yes.
Okay. So you're using Outlook, program, which is one of the Office applications. You're using that to get to your email, okay? Right?
Yes.
Right. Okay. Now, and then the other issue was with a browser. where you were getting a yellow bar that was popping up, you said?
Your yellow bar that was prompting her that her version of Shockwave is old. And there is the Shockwave, but it's Adobe. It's the Adobe. So what I would do is go to Adobe's website, adobe.com, using your Google Chrome or your Microsoft Internet Explorer. And then Adobe provides the ability to download and install the free Adobe Flash Player. Mm-hmm. And Shockwave. And I just don't know why you would use Shockwave. I don't know that many websites use Shockwave anymore. Do they, Cal?
Well, yeah, there's a few of them out there that still use them. And that's fine. There's not a problem with doing it. Like Ed said, goes to Adobe.com, and right there on that front page, if you go all the way down to the bottom, on the right-hand side, you'll see Adobe Reader, Flash Player, and Shockwave. And if you hover your mouse over to Shockwave Player and click it, it will take you to the spot where you can download Shockwave for the update on your machine.
And you might as well do and when you do download it and install it, it's going to ask you, do you wish to install a toolbar? And you want to disable that toolbar. You want to remove the checkbox that says, do you wish to install the
Ask
toolbar or whatever?
A bigger problem since then, though, I did a system restore today.
Mm-hmm.
And since then, now I can't get into anything. I can't get into Google Chrome, any of the icons on my desktop.
Okay, you have a bigger problem, Ben. I tell you what we're going to do. I'm going to put you on hold for just a sec, because we've got a much more complicated problem that I think we can probably solve. But last week we started talking with somebody and it went on for a long time, and I don't think we really ended up helping that person very much.
In this particular case, Foster, when she's got multiple things that are all happening, her best bet would be to find a local computer store in her area and take that machine in and have them take a look at it. She can tell them what she did. They can make an analysis and give it an idea of exactly how to fix it.
Yeah, because more than likely, they're just going to back up her data. And then because it's an HP, they should be able to restore it back to factory settings.
Yes.
And then start reinstalling all the software that she had.
Rather than piece by piece trying to solve these problems, I agree with you. This is one of those cases where we're not kind of shirking our duty here, but rather being much more helpful by saying, take this thing into a shop.
It needs a professional.
Needs a professional to sit down and take a look at this.
I would have a hard time doing with dealing with this.
Well, it requires hands-on at this point.
It would take me 6 hours to fix this, really, literally. Yep.
So again, Pam, our recommendation is you take it into a shop and have them take a good look at that and see if they can take care of getting that for you. Okay, let's go on to Mark from Royal Oak. Welcome to the Internet Advisor. Let's see if we can help you today.
Good afternoon.
Thank you.
Always enjoying listening to your show. I've got an HP Tower unit, and I'm running into two issues. One, if I click on a few icons on my desktop, the programs won't launch. If I have a Quicken that I was using, and all of a sudden I can't start that program up.
Mm-hmm.
What happens when you click on the icon? Does it attempt to do anything, or does it give you dialog box?
I'll get the little circle going around for about 10 seconds, and then it stops. And nothing happens.
How old is that version of Quicken that you have?
Current version, 2015.
Really? What happens instead of clicking on the icon there, if you go into the program files and try to launch the application using a different icon?
And I actually tried going into that, and it does the same thing. It will not launch.
Oh.
And it's done that with a couple other programs. Another one would be the publisher, and it does not launch.
Hmm.
What about, have you tried it in safe mode, just out of curiosity? Is this Windows 7 or Windows 8?
Well, I tried to get into safe mode to fire it up that way.
Yeah.
And I cannot get it to start in safe mode.
Is this Windows 8 or Windows 7?
This is Windows 7.
And it will not go into safe mode. Well, have you tried? There is a way of forcing it to go into safe mode, and you know that by tapping F5 or F8 on power up. But you can also run the msconfig utility, and when you run, you select start run msconfig, and this is one of those hidden utilities that Microsoft has. And when you go into the startup tab in msconfig, you have the ability to... you go into the boot tab, you can select safe boot. And that way, from the Windows graphical interface, instead of trying to capture it with the F8, you're instructing Windows to boot up in safe mode. Have you tried that method?
I wasn't aware. aware of that method.
Okay.
I wasn't either myself.
Well, it's one of those things that I probably use once every 2 or 3 years and I forget about, and then I have
Is
someone...
Is that specific to Windows 7?
Windows... No, all of them.
All of them?
Well, in previous versions, like Vista, they called it diagnostic mode, but okay. In Windows 7, they actually call it safe mode.
So how do you get to it again, Ed?
MSConfig. So right. Select Start, Run, MSConfig, and then you bring... There's a boot tab...
Right, you hit the boot tab.
And then in the boot tab, you have the ability to select boot options, safe mode, minimal, safe mode with networking.
So when you start then again, is that what it'll do, then go into that?
Just sometimes coming into safe mode will allow it to do it. And then maybe he'll see an error message that he's not seeing in normal mode. So when he clicks on those icons or those program entries, maybe that he'll get a message. Hopefully the message will say, I'm sorry, this program can't run in safe mode, but it may give them the actual message, like this program can't be found. I would also recommend that you check your disk for disk errors by going into your My Computer, finding your local C drive, you know, and then telling the C drive to a next boot reboot to check for disk errors and let it go through that 45-minute process.
Mark, how old is your computer?
About 2 years, 2.5.
Well, that's not that old. Maybe it's not it. Have you gone into programs and features in Windows and tried to identify those programs like Quicken or the Adobe Photoshop? Sometimes instead of when you click on the program item that's listed, a lot of programs just say have the ability to uninstall. But when you select the item on some like Microsoft Office and possibly Adobe or Quicken, they'll provide you the ability to repair. So going into programs and features, you have the ability to repair.
That's right.
Okay, I'll take a look at that.
Cal, do you have any, or did I just...
You just about covered everyone now. I was thinking of, with the exception of that really slick trick about bringing up the menu.
But I'm trying to think if there's anything he can do right mouse clicking on those icons.
No, because originally, if you had said that it was only one particular program doing it, then I would probably point to the manufacturer, probably a timer or something like that that's on it. But I think you've covered everything that could be possibly covered.
Wow.
Mark, try those and then give us an email at internetadvisor.net.
One other thing that I might want to suggest too, I didn't mean to cut you off, Foster, is if you have the original installed disk for that Quicken, just reinstall the program again. It should not overwrite your data. Your data should be fine. Mm-hmm. Just reinstall the program and see if it works. If it does in fact work, I would probably go along with Ed saying there's probably something wrong with your hard drive. And you might want to check that out.
Now, do you think there could be any type of viruses or anything that could be doing this? Because usually they don't target
individual programs
Adobe.
Like that.
No. They normally don't target the programs anyway. They usually try to go after the data anyway.
Yeah.
And I've gone through with Malwarebytes and then Adaware ran those.
Yeah. And that doesn't sound like that kind of a problem. Let's try some of these solutions again.
Great.
Give us an email at internetadvisor.net, and we'll see if we can also keep up with you during the week on that, okay?
Thanks, Mark.
Thank you very much, Mark. Hey, we'll be back in just a minute. Tracy out there in Rochester Hills, and your question at 800-859-0957. My thanks to Shannon Maley and Mike Stett, who are behind the windows, been helping us here get our program on the way, a special kind of edition of the Internet Advisor today. Glad that you could stick around for that. Okay, let's check out, let's see right now, Tracy in Rochester Hills, how can we help you?
Hello.
Hi, how you doing?
I hope you can help me here.
Let's see if we can.
At the beginning of the month, I went from Windows 7 to 10.
Okay.
And everything appeared to be working, and I have one real nagging problem. Mm-hmm. Is that in Word 2007 or in Gmail or even when I have a company that has a box where I can send them a note, it continually changes the size, and it'll go from 50% magnification to 300% back and forth in a couple of words. And just drives me crazy.
I saw that on my wife's laptop.
So how does it manifest? I'm having a hard time visualizing it. So you're reading the website and... No.
It's when I'm typing.
Yeah, when you're typing.
And only typing, yeah. Okay.
Yeah. Is this on a laptop?
On a laptop, yes.
Okay.
What laptop are you running?
I'm running a G72...
HP?
Hewlett-Packard.
Okay, yeah. It's an HP. Okay, and it sounds like a later model, am I right? More recent model?
Well, it's 5 years old, but it was pretty new at that time.
No, that's okay.
What web browser are you using when you're typing these in?
Edge.
Chrome.
Oh, Chrome.
But also Word 2007.
Oh, and also in 2007. I'm thinking that your palm is hovering over the touchpad on the device on the far right-hand side of the HP touchpad, and somehow that has that touchpad gesture has been modified, or the default for
hijacked.
That now is it not hijacked.
Oh.
Is now the configuration for that right-handed side has been zoom instead of scroll.
Wow.
So okay. You might, the first suggestion I would have is going to the HP website and downloading updated, is it semantic? Not semantic.
Synaptic.
Synaptic.
Synaptic. Right.
Drivers for your unit.
And, okay.
Or
okay.
Going into the control panel and under the mouse controls and looking what the gestures are on that.
No, it wouldn't be under the mouse. It'd be under the trackpad controls.
Yeah,
well,
trackpad.
Yes.
You're
thank
right.
you.
Yep.
Oh, I've never seen that there. Okay, I'll have to look.
Yeah, well, if you go back and look, you'll see it in there. It'll be a representation, usually a square, and then it'll have a bunch of different features on it. And one of them is, like Ed said, scroll, and one of them is zoom, and turn the zoom off.
Okay.
It's usually a little checkbox.
Okay.
Okay.
Try those things and see if that helps you, okay?
Okay, fine.
All right.
Thank you for your help. Okay.
Yeah. Yep. You know what I ran into that's really a nuisance is on Windows 10, my Google Chrome does not work properly anymore. When I go to Google Maps or maps.google.com, I lose the plus and minus capability.
Really?
But as soon as I bring up Edge or Internet Explorer, magically it appears. So it's like Microsoft doesn't want me to use Chrome's. Our maps.google.com. You think there's a conspiracy there?
I just wonder.
Dang.
Doesn't seem like Microsoft to me.
No.
Dennis from Westland, welcome to the Internet Advisor. How can we help you?
I started to clue in on what you just responded regarding the Windows 10 versus Windows 7 on the laptop. I'm wondering if you're familiar with the differences. My wife has a... I've got a computer and it's about a year and a half old and it's got Windows 7 on it. It came with the Windows 8 disk, which I've never installed. Been comfortable with the Windows 7 because I came from an XP.
Right.
But the last couple of weeks I've been turning my computer on. It says, you know, your free upgrade is waiting for Windows 10. I'm wondering, well, what about these guys? I wonder if they're familiar with it. And when I'm up against it, instead of sticking with 7, which I'm already comfortable with, is 10 a big jump? You know, it's something I should not go with yet.
Well, let me say, first of all, you're going to need to upgrade to Windows 8.1. That's the first upgrade.
No, I don't think so. No. I think you could jump right from Windows 7.
Straight to 7 to 10
to 10.
As I know.
Oh, really?
But I've already talked to several people like Grandpa, but he's 87 years old. My wife's father, I'm her husband. Yeah. My wife's father. And he goes, get this off of here. How do I do it? It was too much for him because he's very set in his ways.
Yes.
And he had his icons in his desk that he did every day and his Quicken was here and his browser was here and those were all gone. So... For
although
him,
they
work.
Can be brought back.
Yes, but he had lots of time.
Right, exactly. But no, he's set in his ways. Dennis, you don't sound quite that old.
No, I'm not. I have to admit.
I would say, come on, Dennis.
You know, he can always undo
adventure?
It. He can go for
true.
It. And I even talked to Grandpa how to undo it. He undid it, and he said an hour later, everything was back.
Yeah.
But before you do either one, make sure you back up all your data
first. There you go.
Microsoft will allow you to remove Windows 10 for the first 30 days for free. And matter of fact, you can install Windows 10 362 times anytime this year, as long as you uninstall it the same day. So for the first year, you can upgrade to Windows 10 362 times. Well, not that many now anymore. And as long as you uninstall it in the same day.
Dennis, do it. Do it, Dennis. Seriously. You got a newer machine, so the obviously the hardware will handle it. And essentially, Windows 10 is Windows 7, but on steroids. The protection is better. It looks pretty much the same. And yes, there are changes.
Yeah, there are changes. At least the start menu is back. And that's what so many people were griping about with Windows 8 is like, how do I navigate anywhere?
Right, right.
You know? Yeah, I'd like to avoid Windows 8 altogether because I've heard too many bad things about it. You know?
Well, Windows 8 is something definitely to go by quickly. And if you could go from 7 to 10, God bless you.
You know,
yeah, it says this is the best Windows yet. And I'm thinking, well, you know, is this real? You know?
Windows 7 was the best Windows yet. And Windows 10 is pretty close. Yes. I really enjoy Katana. Katana is the voice recognition software that comes with it, and I just wish it was always listening to me so I don't have to reach over and click on the button and to the microphone, and so I could be like, Katana, what time is it? You know, I'm too lazy to look at the taskbar, you know, or something like that. It actually, the voice recognition works very well, and I have a lot of fun playing with that.
I tuned in kind of late, and I just heard the last of the previous answer regarding Windows, working with on Chrome as opposed to Internet Explorer. There's a difference?
No, what I was complaining about, we had a user, a person that just called that said that she was having difficulties with Chrome, and then what I interjected was that I had Chrome on my computer, and when I brought up Microsoft would like you to use their new web browser in Windows 10 called Microsoft Edge. Mm-hmm. What I did is I use Chrome, too, sometimes, and I was trying to bring up, I used Windows Edge to go to maps.google.com, and I could not, I lost the ability to hit the plus and minus that you usually do to zoom in on the maps and to move around. It did not, I lost that ability.
However, it was there miraculously.
I was making a snarky comment about how Microsoft and Google are not playing nice together when you use the alternates browser on their websites. That's all.
It
was a snarky response.
Yeah, they want you to use their browser. But I think, Dennis Riddy, bold move. Move to 10. And as Ed said, you can go back if you don't like it.
Okay, now what about using Windows 10 with Tor browser?
With a Tor browser? Now, that is an interesting question.
No, I've only used the Tor browser on my Linux Mint system, but I imagine, Windows 10 is basically, in essence, it's the same as Windows 8, which was the same as Windows 9. Really, the only difference is security, patches, but the core operating system's the same, except Microsoft has really refined the boot up time, so it should still work. The drivers that you used on Windows 7 still work in Windows 10.
Okay.
So there shouldn't be a problem with Tor.
Should not be a problem with Tor.
Shouldn't be a problem, but I'd love to hear what your experience is, all right?
Okay, do I got time for one more question?
Nope, sorry, but I'll put you on hold, and maybe we can talk with you after the show, all right?
Okay.
Thank you very much for your call. Lynn out there in New York State, hang in there, and Joe in Rochester, we'll try to get you after the program. Folks, this has been... Thank you for putting up... we had a little bit of a change here because of Detroit Navy Week. Watch our site, internetadvisor.net, and you can listen to both hours of our show. We had a great hour, the first hour, talking about security on university campuses. And we were talking with Dr. Don Welch, who is the University of Michigan's Chief Information Security Officer. And Ed also had some tips on preserving the life of your battery. So all sorts of interesting things. 2 hours. You'll catch them if you go to internetadvisor.net and do that on Sunday night when we have the full podcast there. Thanks so much. On behalf of all of us here, have a great week.
You've been listening to a podcast of the Internet Advisor, Detroit's longest-running, locally produced computer show with Foster Brown, Gary Baker, and our team of experts. For more information about our weekly show, to ask a question of our experts, or find show notes for this podcast or others, visit internetadvisor.net and look for us on Facebook. Thanks for listening.